From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello. Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
Our compatriot Noel is on adventures, but will return soon. They called me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here, and that makes this stuff they don't want you to know. However, you are not alone, fellow conspiracy realist. We are exploring the idea of humanity in 1,000 years with a ton of asterisks and a dollop of optimism, and we are not diving into this exploration on our lonesome. No, quite the opposite. We are joined by some friends of the show, some personal friends of ours, the host of our peer podcast, Hysteria 51. Check it out if you haven't yet.
Everyone, please welcome John Goforth and Brent Hand.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Guys, I told you I shouldn't bring Brent, but you still allowed it. I don't know.
Yeah. I begged and begged and, you know, just followed him like a puppy
probably
dog.
Probably the worst decision was allowing Conspiracy Bot here. We will try to keep him quiet.
That's true. That's true. Conspiracy Bot also, thank you for coming.
Did you notice that Scully seems to really be getting along with Conspiracy Bot?
Yeah, it's weird. I know this is an audio podcast. Maybe if they do something that's remotely work appropriate, we'll take a picture and post it. But right now.
Yeah, we can't show
right
it.
Now we're just like,
it was just Barry getting him through TSA, so he needs to enjoy himself because it's the last time we're traveling with him.
Smells like circuits burning in
That's
the corner.
Right.
So, guys, like most people, we spend a great deal of our time here in the present, 2019, as we record this.
Everyone I know spends their time in 2019.
Yes. So, yeah. We spend a lot of this time thinking about what might or might not happen in the future. And most of the time, when we're using these great predictive computers that we refer to as our brains, we're using this this imaginative capacity to think of what we could call small events, not in a diminutive way, just in like things that don't really rock the friggin' timeline, you know?
That's on your calendar.
Right, stuff right. That's on your calendar. Where am I going to go for lunch? What are my list of errands, you know? How can I get out of that conference call? Those kind of things.
When will our sun supernova? I've got that on my calendar.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Because we have money on that, right?
Yes.
So we also have a tendency, and we could even call it a compulsion, to wonder about those large events. Let's define it very loosely, arbitrarily, as any event that involves a group of people large enough such that members of the same group may not know each other and may never meet. So this is interesting because for both Hysteria 51 and Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, really for any podcast, that's a large scale event because a lot of us listening now are probably not going to meet each other.
Right.
Whoa. I never thought about it like that, Ben.
The universe is a cold and lonely place. So, you know, we've got examples of these. Like, what's a large event?
Oh, sure. Like a huge election, let's say, a primary election or a presidential election. The people who are actually voting probably aren't going to meet each other. You're definitely not going to meet everybody who's voting in that election.
9/11.
Yes.
There you go.
Like from impact from not being there, even to the people who were there. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were so many people impacted that weren't just in those buildings and surrounding communities and such, and family members, not all of them all met.
And that's an excellent example because that's a single event rather than something like a war that goes on for years.
Well, and that's a large event, and it's also a long-term event, right?
Yeah, we're still reeling and the effects are felt.
Yeah, yeah. And that's because in addition to defining something as a small or a large event, we can also imagine them the way you said, Matt, short or long-term. So 9/11, clearly a long-term event, but a short-term, large-scale event would be a celebration in your city, like the Bulls win in Chicago. Because you guys live in the Windy City, and when the Bulls win in Chicago, what do people go nuts?
Excuse me, we call it the lower fourth.
Well,
we haven't seen that for so long. I'm not sure how they react. But when the Hawks won the Cup, yes. When the Cubs won,
7 million people, I think, showed up. Wow. It was one of the largest human gatherings in history.
Dear God.
Wow. So, yeah. Yeah.
So a long-term, small-scale event then would be something where you're like, all right, I got this kid now. I got to send him to college at some point. I better start putting away the scratch, right?
Right.
And this can take longer, but it's not really – it might not alter a timeline. Today's episode is about a long-term, large-scale event. One of the biggest questions we ever deal with – what's going to happen to us, you know?
The collective us.
Yeah, the collective us.
The species.
What are we? Where are we going? Not what's going to happen today or tomorrow, but 1,000 years from now. And off air, this is an idea that we were talking about that we had originally – I don't know if we mentioned this on Hysteria 51. We had originally, when we were talking with each other, we're like, all right, yeah, one of us will do an episode on humanity in 1,000 years, and then we'll do a companion episode about humanity in 10,000 years. And we started looking into the research, and we were – you know, Paul, you're going to have to bleep me on this, but we were like, holy f***. Yeah. 10,000 years.
Yeah, I mean, you can just say whatever you want. Maybe, you know,
We're all jellyfish.
I know. And even with, so we just did an excellent episode. But, well, I really enjoyed it. I thought you
Me
guys
too.
Did a
great job.
I
was good.
Yeah. and you too, conspiracy bot. And we did an episode on the future of humanity in 100 years, and what you guys showed us was that there's quite a lot of stuff down the pike that not only is possible, but is in a very real sense inevitable.
Right.
And that's the big – I think that's the big defining difference of, mm-hmm. you know, when we look at these things is what are we controlling and what is just going to happen? That's you know, this inevitability that is just – we're careening towards these events.
A lot of times I think especially with technology – it really is the pebble that starts the avalanche. Mm. But once it's started, you're not stopping it.
Yeah.
Like the progression of our processing power isn't going to – even though we're not following Moore's law still, it is not going to stop.
Yeah, it's a train with no brakes.
Right.
Yeah, this is the part of the show where we want to let you know that if you haven't checked out Hysteria 51 – please do. In this episode, we're going to be exploring some things that dovetail with the previous episode. So if you want to get the full cinema for your ears experience, stop now. We'll wait. Check out our earlier episode.
And for you comic book fans, we're referring to this as a crossover event.
That's right. Yes.
A shared universe.
Yes. I'm Batman.
Oh.
All right. I respect that. How far are we crossing over? Can I go Marvel?
Yeah. Why not?
Amalgam. There we go. Yeah.
Just stay away from Image and we'll be fine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're creator owned. it's true. So, all right. Let's get to it.
Sure. So let's talk about where we humans, everybody in this room, everyone listening, is going to end up in 1,000 years, 10 generations ostensibly from now.
Well, to understand that, Matt, don't we have to go back to would it be helpful for us to go back to 1,000 years before now?
I guess.
Okay, cool. Thanks for saying that because otherwise
– No, we're going to skip that.
I would have been like, all right, never mind.
That's really the only thing we can do to have an understanding, right? Well, let's see how far we've come in 1,000 years and then extrapolate from there.
And Brett, earlier in our previous episode, you mentioned the phantom time hypothesis. Mm-hmm. So when we're playing a little bit with history, please write in, by the way, to – Hysteria Nation and us, and let us know what your take is on what actually happened in 1019.
You're right. What year is it really?
Yeah, and you can use the Juche calendar if you want as well. But okay, so here's the good news for a lot of people. In broad evolutionary terms, just basic biology, 1,000 years is not a drop in the bucket. It's not an iota of spit. It's not a snap.
So you're saying it's not enough time to develop gills, Kevin Costner style?
The only flaw in one Waterworld.
The only one. It's been only. Worked out. That's Wait. The only flaw.
Wait, he had gills in Waterworld?
He did, behind his ear. Yeah. Wow.
And for some reason, people hated that. Yeah. They were like, that's so convenient. It's so great, you jerk.
Totally forgot about that.
I got an idea, guys. Mad Max on a water world.
Now stay with me now.
Only if we get the guy from Field of Dreams. Right? That's really the glue. But yeah, this means – what does this mean? Like, what happens if we meet someone putting aside all the interesting problems with time travel? We just – Well, don't think about it too hard.
For all
hard.
Intents and yeah. purposes, if you met someone, besides, you know, maybe some language barriers and the way they're dressed, you wouldn't really know the difference because in the last 1,000 years, we haven't changed that much.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you'd probably right. kill them, like, with like pathogens.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Don't breathe on them.
Don't give them a blanket.
They're probably like 25 years old and look 70, you know what I mean?
but it'd be a North Sentinel Island situation, possibly. But yeah, you're absolutely right. You've nailed it. In one, we would still eat the same food. We still need the same range of environmental conditions. And if there's a little bit of romance in the air, you can reproduce.
There's actually a documentary that explores this. I think the other member was a little older than just 1,000 years old, mm-hmm. but explores how they might operate in modern society. It was called Encino Man.
Oh, God.
I fell for it. I've got to learn that every time you reference a documentary.
It's not.
Yeah. So it's interesting. There have been some discernible changes. People like Dr. Alan Kwan, who works with computational genomics, he has some very specific ones. One of them is kind of weird, right? Did you saw this?
Yeah. The concept of our foreheads changing.
Yeah, they call it the Manning syndrome.
Yeah.
Peyton Manning syndrome.
You guys are just
– brutal.
You're knocking them down.
Remember that old insult when people call someone forehead? More like five head. Yeah. Pretty soon, if this trend is correct, 1,000 years from now, people will be making fun of three heads if your forehead's too small.
Too small, right.
So – we also seem to have a trend of growing taller as a species, but a lot of that is dicey. Like, can we call that straight up evolution, or is that just our ability to feed ourselves better?
Right.
And breed with Scandinavians.
And yeah, they're out there.
A tall bunch.
They're out there. I like how now we have this. We have this conspiracy that there are Scandinavians.
Poor Scandinavians. Like, I heard these bastards on that staring.
But the biggest difference between that human and you, really, would be things that are a little different. They're societal things, right? Medical care, advances in technology that have allowed for communication. Like you said, language barriers are going to be different. Even just overall, the beliefs and values of that person are going to be vastly different.
Sure.
But I mean, that's really it.
It doesn't mean that they have lower or higher cognitive ability, right? It just means that their priorities will also widely differ.
Yeah, you're very much a product of your environment and your surrounding. And so that's going to play heavily into that.
You might show them a car and they think it's magic, but you're so right about it not being their cognitive ability. It's why we did an episode not that long ago on Göbekli Tepe. And the the pyramids or whatever, and there's all of these anthropologists that say, well, how did they do this? How could they possibly figure this out? Well, because they had the same size brains that we do. Yeah. That's how they did. I mean, a lot of elbow grease, maybe a few decades to figure it out, mm-hmm. and you can build stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why, you know, there's a valid criticism of a lot of ancient alien theories where it's like, okay, so what's more likely? Is it more likely that someone came all the way to Earth and built a vague geometric shape and then left and didn't, you know, they don't want you to know why? Or is it likely that people were always relatively on the same cognitive scale?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
So, this would appear to be good news at first blush because this means that for the past 1,000 years, the biggest changes to our species have been cultural and technological, right? Even the clear and excellent example of the diseases that we carry and are immune to, that is a technological improvement. We didn't just biologically figure that out. And our population has skyrocketed. If we were a product at your local grocery store, what's the popular grocery store in Chicago right now?
Mariano's.
And Jewel.
Yeah.
Mariano's.
Really?
Jewel. Okay.
Kroger, baby.
Yeah. Mariano's is owned by Kroger. Yep. It's an issue.
Ah, fingers on the hand. I see. Well, if we were a product in Mariano's, we'd still have the same ingredients, the same great taste, the same oddly fragile packaging. It's just easier to find us in more places. And we have a great example. We've pulled this up before.
Oh, the world population at this moment?
Yes.
Right now,
yes.
As we're recording this?
Yes.
7,688,534,429.
Yep.
And that's spinning really fast.
Oh, it's going really fast.
I mean, when you look at that clock, it's a staggering thing to see. That's how fast people are coming into this world.
And we always it's always tempting when we bring that up in an episode. It's always tempting to check it again at the end and see how many people are
16 billion. What the hell?
The premise that most of us go with when we're engaging in futurism is that where will we put all these people?
Yeah.
There's some new studies out that are looking at larger societies, maybe not the globe as a whole, and saying actually we are not currently running at replacement rate. Mm-hmm. So although it's kind of like the fact that our population is still growing is a function of things that happened 50 years ago because those people are still alive and they overpopulated then. Mm-hmm. And that if you look a few generations in the future, you could actually start to see evening out of – because this number keeps growing – evening out or even decline. So there is not a consensus in the scientific community that overpopulation is going to continue to exponentially explode the way we kind of all been fed by
– like Malthusian reasoning and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You don't want to go Ozymandias on it and just wipe out most everybody?
Yeah, right.
Just snap your fingers?
Yeah, Thanos, yeah, that stuff.
Thanos and, it, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'll tell you, the thing that made that guy, Thanos, a real villain, and the biggest plot hole in that film, spoiler, is he could have just made the universe twice as big.
Or just doubled all – yeah, just snap it and you make it twice as big. You double all of the – whatever you need, yeah. All the resources.
I think he was just being super emo, to be completely honest with you. But his cosmic Billy Corganness aside, we can say right now in 2019 –
He also opened a tea shop.
He also opened a tea shop. We as a species are making some huge waves on multiple fronts. And Matt and I were trying to figure out the best way to frame this, and what we came up with was the good, the bad, and the ugly, right?
So, wah, wah, wah.
Yes. There you go.
I can't do it.
No, that's great. Ennio Morricone, right?
Yeah.
Good things. Okay, good things. When it comes to technology, we're the best in the biz because we're the only ones we really know.
Yeah.
You know, like some higher order mammals can – make tools, corvids can use sticks or whatever, but as far as we know, no non-human entity has built a computer yet.
Right.
Yet. But
I mean, I'm giving it a 50-50 on dolphins, but we haven't found them yet.
Right, right. And it's probably built to do something that only dolphins
care
about.
Yeah, we wouldn't understand it.
Yeah. We wouldn't get it.
It's for dolphin kisses.
Yeah, right. So some of us listening now, we remember a world before smartphones. We talked about this in our episode about humanity a century from now. We remember times before the internet, a world of landlines and paper maps. Somebody would tell you where to go at a certain time, and you would have to remember it yourself.
Yeah.
And we are also learning more about our own bodies. Genetic research is definitely going to help us eradicate some genetic diseases, as well as eventually allowing us to tweak some specific traits for practical purposes and cosmetic ones. You know what I mean? You want kids with purple eyes?
A little
boom.
Fine-tuning.
Yeah.
One of the you mentioned on the technology side, we talk about AI, and we've all done episodes on AI. It's probably not worth diving deep into, but it is worth talking about that we need to be careful as it relates to, you know, creating nanobots and things of that nature. I recently read are you guys familiar with Nick Bostrom?
Yes.
Swedish philosopher. He's got some really cool and interesting stuff on the future. And I read this thing about the they call it the paperclip maximizer. And it's basically a thought experiment. That's all it is. But it's the idea that the most mundane thing that you could tell an artificial intelligence to do could turn out really poorly. So here's a quote from him. Suppose we have an AI whose only goal is to make as many paperclips as possible. The AI will quickly realize that it would be much better if there were no humans, because humans might decide to switch it off and their ultimate goal is to make as many paperclips as possible.
So this is a cheery story.
Yes.
And this is generalized AI, so it can think big picture.
Correct.
Right. Okay.
Also, human bodies contain a lot of atoms that could be made into paperclips, reformatted and turned into paperclips. The future that AI would be trying to gear towards would be one in which there were a lot of paperclips but not a lot of humans. And if you hadn't programmed that robot to value human life or to understand empathy, that could be a problem.
Yeah.
Wow.
That leads us straight into the bad.
Yes. The really bad.
That's an excellent example. Many of the self-same technological innovations that are looming on our species' horizons will probably create new problems as readily as they solve existing ones. Like, John, your example with the paperclip maximizer, aside from being frankly terrifying, is spot on, because we don't know what this stuff will be like once we actually create it. To our common knowledge, there is no functioning generalized machine consciousness, generalized AI.
Right.
There's stuff like – no offense, conspiracy bot. But there's stuff that can do specific tasks.
We haven't reached the singularity.
Right.
Right. And that's why it's such a broad term, because we don't – it's that we don't know. And that's why it's so scary for people and it's so inspiring for people. And everyone's seen Terminator, you know. And so that's always looming in the back of your mind, because that is, I guess, a possibility.
Yeah, and that's a good metaphor, but it looks like we may well have a Terminator situation. It just won't look human. It'll be gray goo.
Yes, though this is the thing I wanted to bring up. The paperclip problem gets exponentially scarier if it's not making paperclips, if it's replicating, if it's just making more of itself, right?
Oh, yeah.
And if it's a nanoscale technology that's just self-replicating, that means that the gray goo that is inside of our heads that can come up with making a nanobot and then getting that nanobot to have artificial technology to continue to replicate then creates this thing that occurs out in the physical world that is a gray goo that is just an entire planet covered in nanobots that have self-replicated to the point where that's all that's left.
That's all that's there.
Yeah, exactly. And if we survive all of this, then the other bad news concerns our bodies and the environment in which they live. Genetic research. Everybody loves it. I think we shouted out Gattaca earlier. It's a fantastic film. Watch it again if you've already seen it. Like most advanced technologies, especially in their earlier days, this is going to be controlled by wealthy institutions at first because of the way that society functions right now. And so before it bleeds into the genes of a general population, before like the descendant of Jeff Bezos scandalizes his or her family and sleeps with a peasant, this stuff could result in something at its most extreme that we would call man-made speciation. But then there's the chance, we talked about this before, the tinkering with traits in one part of the genetic code could have unintended disastrous consequences. For fiction, a good example of this would be the Eloy and the Morlocks from The Time Machine.
Right. You know, did we have the best of intentions and all of a sudden now we're mole men underneath the ground because we can't be out in the sunlight just because CRISPR ran astray?
There's a ticking time bomb inside of every cell. A lot of geneticists are like, well, the key to immortality could be turning off that time bomb. One of the challenges or scary parts of that is there's one type of cell today that does not have that time bomb in it. It's a cancer cell.
Ah, yes.
And so you change the makeup of a cell a little too much, you become a big tumor all of a sudden.
Right, Eesh. Right. And technically speaking, very technically speaking, there is one immortal individual, Henrietta Lacks, at least her cancer. Right.
You guys know about him?
No.
Well, listen to our episode on Henrietta Lacks. Do we do an episode or just a video?
We did an episode on immortality.
Got it. Okay.
And the various terribly problematic ways you can achieve it.
It's this crazy messed up thing where this one woman's cancer cells were taken as samples to be tested, right, for testing. And then all of the other samples that existed in this one building ended up having Henrietta Lacks's cancer cells in those samples. And then they started realizing, wait a second, somehow these samples, because they were being shipped across the planet to be studied, they ended up in all the cancer cell samples, or at least the vast majority of them.
And they continue to reproduce.
Yes. Yes.
Even after being
– yes.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's this insane thing.
Technically immortal, but not the kind of immortality you probably
want. Yeah. Not what you want to be remembered for.
But it goes back to our whole humanity as a virus thing spreading across the cosmos from our last episode.
Isn't that what you want to do? You want to reproduce. Mm-hmm. You want to live. You know, that you're breaking it down to its basis terms, but I mean that's the idea. And guess what? I needed to leave this body. Well, I need to leave this planet. You know, they say we're going to have to be an interplanetary species. Well, guess what? Viruses spread.
We get angry when it's cancer, but we're 100% on board if it's us.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Right.
So the last thing is the climate.
Right? Yes.
The climate, you've heard it before. It's a tragedy of commons writ large. Unless we all at the same time make some massive changes, the climate seems set to inevitably change in some drastic ways. Ocean acidification, temperature changes, deforestation, and so on.
I have one question.
Yes.
You guys are familiar with the Kardashev scale.
Yes.
We are currently a 0.7 on the Kardashev scale.
0.72,
0.73.
Come on now.
Okay. Go team.
They say that a level one civilization can control all of the energy on their planet, and as a function of that, they can control all of the weather, everything pretty much that's happening in their neck of the woods. If we achieve level one in the next 1,000 years, don't we also achieve the ability to go, oh, well, we can just do whatever we need to do to the atmosphere and make sure that doesn't happen?
Yes. The problem is getting to that 1,000-year mark.
From here to level one.
Right.
Yeah. Like chasm that is.
Yes. Don't let anything that we've already done to ourselves erase before we can get there.
That's fair.
If life has existed on other planets and emerged from a goo, from a, you know, a chemical reaction that occurred because there just happened to be the right molecules on that planet, don't you think they go through a very similar process of figuring out
that like life is probably very similar of – that's the grand equalizers if they're smart enough to save themselves, because they all probably come up to this part this where state. We're at now. We're very close to the tipping point. We were talking about, you know, a singularity. We're almost to that point now where we need to decide that we want to better ourselves or do we want to wipe ourselves out?
I think that's assuming that they are like – normal-ish, whatever we consider that, like carbon-based life forms.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, there's also people that speculate that on gas giants, sentient life could develop in a way that we don't even understand.
Right. Like ammonia-based.
Silicon-based. Yeah. No, I guess what I mean is the fuel, the available fuel that exists on whatever planetary body that the life emerges from ends up being used up to an extent or altered to an extent, no matter what it is, that
so
it
for
makes
us to be able to
–
in 1,000 years from now, if we're going to be able to do the things that we need to do to save our planet from extinction of whatever might happen, to be able to explore the cosmos, we're going to need energy and things like that that come from far more – exotic places,
absolutely.
Black holes, other dimensions. These are the things that they say that we're going to be playing with if we are, you know, to be a level two or something like that. So climate in and of itself is nothing.
yeah.
And yet it's everything.
Climate
exactly.
Climate is the the VHS that we have to use your earlier example, Matt, the VHS we have to keep in working order until we can afford our,
right.
our DVD
that's a great
player.
That's a great analogy.
So the last thing, we mentioned the good. We talked about the bad, the big bads. Now we have to talk about the ugly just briefly. There's one ugly thing you should keep in your mind, folks, as we listen along. The number one ugly thing, the frightening, horrifying, anti-Ganesh-like elephant in our species collective room is, put simply, this. There is a very high chance that we will not make it to the 1,000-year mark. We were safe in our earlier episode. We said, you know, we're assuming that nothing terrible happens to the 100-year mark. Now we're doing that 10 times.
Yeah.
You know? And in Stephen Hawking's estimation, we absolutely are not going to make it unless we get off of Earth.
Right.
Stephen Hawking's not necessarily a curmudgeon, but calls him like he sees him. He has some statements that are pretty much along the lines of, screw humans unless they get off Earth. Screw Earth. We need to leave it. You know, no disrespect, but it's right. not working out. Aliens are real, and screw them too. Yeah. We're going to get AI, and you know what? Screw that. That's, I mean, I'm paraphrasing a little.
Yeah, yeah. We learned about a lot of that stuff. Have you guys ever spoken with Josh Clark, who did End of the World from Stuff You Should Know?
No, we really want to, we're going to have him on to talk the Fermi Paradox.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Oh, that's going to be great. Yeah, so he has a podcast that explores
all the chuckles that are facing us.
Oh, yeah. It's a cavalcade of comedy. Yeah. But we recommend that, and with all this in mind, we have to understand that everything we are about to contemplate about human civilization 1,000 years from now is inherently optimistic, if only because we are assuming that somewhere, somehow, something like humanity is still partying on in 3019. What are we talking about? We'll tell you after a word from our sponsor. Here's where it gets crazy. Humanity, 1,000 years from now, welcome to 3019. If you're listening to this, then hypothetically, you have survived. And out of all the weird trials and travails that you have encountered in 3019, you have decided to take a break and listen to a podcast, and you've chose this one.
Yeah.
So thank you.
good job doing some ancient recovery of either technology or, I don't know.
This is a part of an archaeological dig. Right. Yeah.
This show is actually included in the Tesseract. And they found
it. Well, I'm sure this is going to go into the Smithsonian at one point in time or another, so, you know.
It's true.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
It'll be like the regional version, you know, like how there are TEDx talks. It'll be like a Smithsonian X. So let's see. We left off 1,000 years ago. We left off with the fact that there are inevitable things that will happen in the climate as we knew it from 2019, right? So we're 1,000 years later. A lot of water under the bridge, you know.
A lot of water over the
over
bridge.
Over the bridge. Right.
A lot of water over the bridge is what he did there. Matt, can you tell us a little bit about what's happened with the climate?
Well, odds are humanity continued despite our best intentions. We continue to use carbon-based fuels and other things that put CO2 emissions out into the atmosphere, right? Ooh. Because as of 2019, CO2 emissions are at an average of 385 parts per million. Sounds really low, right? Ooh. Per million?
Yeah.
Sounds really low. But here's the deal. That's increasing. And if that gets up just a little bit higher to, say, 450, maybe all the way up to 600 parts per million, and that could be really bad.
Ooh.
Because if it reaches that level as an average, and then if in some way all CO2 emissions just stop dead, no more carbon dioxide is added to the atmosphere, this is what would happen. There would be persistent decreases in dry season rainfall that are and would be comparable to the 1930s depression era, like the Dust Bowl that we've all heard of. That would just exist. That would, there would be in zones all
over.
This
is your life now.
Yeah. Well, it would be – there would be zones of this stuff, this terrible situation all across the planet, everywhere from southern Europe to northern Africa, southwestern North America, which already, you know, is not doing great in 2019 if you think about some of the wildfire situations and other just – heat situations. Southern Africa would be affected, Western Australia, human water supplies, specifically fresh water supplies, aquifers.
Which is already suspect right now.
Yes. That stuff would decrease much further. Again, fires would just be everywhere.
If you're one of those people who hates being cold, 3019 is like your year.
Yeah. Actually, several years after 2019 and then up until 3019.
It's your phase. It's your era.
And all kinds of agriculture is going to be hugely affected by this just because of the differences in rainfall at this point because of these things.
Now, you said if all the emissions stop. So you're meaning you're saying that we make progress and they all stop, but these will still be the outcomes.
Yes, because it takes that long for a large climate change to be affected, essentially 1,000 years, right? That's one of the main issues. It takes forever the effects will be seen rather quickly. And then it takes a long time to fix those problems.
To put the toothpaste back into the tube.
Yes.
That is to say, though, or this is without saying, that there could be technological advancements up to this point where we could cause that CO2 to be out of the atmosphere for one reason or another.
That's our wild card. That's technology. Our wild card. We're leaning heavy on this one.
I don't know about you guys, but I've learned most recently that climate change isn't actually a real thing.
Oh, really?
And no, it's not a real thing. You saw how cold it got in the Midwest this winter. Mm-hmm. Obviously, things aren't getting warmer.
6 feet of climate change out there, global warming building, six inches. Whatever.
And as we all know, plants like CO2. So this isn't a problem. I don't know why we're talking about this. Yeah. I kid. But in all seriousness, I do think if we make it to 1,000 years from now, isn't that kind of part and parcel with we will have the technology to fix this? Like the in-between time, like you mentioned before, Ben, is the challenge.
Yes.
But if we make it there, unless – I guess there's one addendum to that. If we get reduced to the place where we are, you know, a bunch of tribes running around again because we've lost technology because of cataclysmic events, I suppose in that case it wouldn't. But assuming we're still a relatively normal society, whether it's a global society or still split up – by then, wouldn't we have the tech to affect change here?
Hopefully. The question is whether, given our tribalistic nature, we would be capable of cooperating on a large enough scale to implement it in a meaningful way. So maybe some country or some institute, or increasingly what would be likely is some large private institution, a company.
The Koch brothers.
The Koch brothers. Nestle, Unilever, Halliburton, all the hits, all the good ones. they have a let's say that they have a way to game the weather in a specific region, or they have something like innovative breakthrough.
The weather dominator.
Yeah.
And throw the wild card in, and you're fine.
Right. The question is what. What sort of negotiation or arrangement would they expect people to enter into in order to gain access to that technology? That study about CO2, by the way, is from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And according to their study, they're not a super controversial group, by the way.
No. Actually, NOAA. I mean, quit getting biblical on me.
They're sort of the bad boys of oceanography. they do say in this same study that changes in surface temperature, this is a quotation, rainfall and sea level are largely irreversible for more than 1,000 years after CO2 emissions are completely stopped. And they, if you look at the study, they've gamed it such that they go from the average emission now to maybe they say it increases just a little bit and then it all stops. It increases toward that more reasonable number that Matt just named, maxing out at 600 per million, and then that just stops. the scary thing is it's not going to completely stop.
Right.
Like, that's just not how things of that scale
operate. Well, we'll be breathing.
That's true.
Like, we emit CO2 every time we take a breath.
Classic us.
Damn virus.
I'm sorry. I've been really away from the podcast, off topic here. You guys ever get caught in the overuse of a turn of phrase or a figure of speech?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't stop using it. You're like, ah.
I've got to stop referring to things as classic, whatever the other person just said.
It's kind of like when I refer to things as a documentary when they're not really documentaries. Right.
There you go. But you did that so well because I fell for that. After you had clearly shown us that was on the way. Yeah, the other one is I will die on this hill, which is a melodramatic way to reply to anything. That aside.
Barring you actually being on a hill and willing to die over it.
Right. That has not happened yet. So if you're listening in 3019, write in and let us know what your favorite turn of future phrase is, assuming you're alive.
It's like Bill and Ted. You guys literally saved the universe. Yeah. Oh,
God. Well, you're in this too now, John. Yeah, you're right. Both right. And Paul.
And all of this is just to say that in 1,000 years, if we don't fix this, right, mm-hmm. it will look this way.
Right.
So, and the other thing that we'll see is sea levels because of this, and it's directly related to those CO2 emissions.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's also a pretty – it doesn't sound as bad initially when you say it. That if it happens the same way, oceans will rise at an average of, I think, 1.2 feet or something. Or what is it?
1.3 to 3.2 feet.
That's exactly what it is. So like a maximum of a meter, right?
But when you think about that, though.
Yes.
Bye-bye Florida.
Yes.
You know, bye-bye all these coastal areas.
The Solomon like Islands.
Yeah.
A lot of Micronesia. Then the leaders of those countries, a lot of island nations, are very well aware of this because even back in 2019, they could see this stuff happening and they pled their case to a thing we used to call the United Nations, which may still be around. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, speaking of in 2019, it was in 2018, I believe, that a piece of the Arctic shelf fell off that was the size of Delaware.
Jeez.
Delaware. What a wonderfully descriptive size. Yes. Delaware.
That's our new – let's just compare things to
– the new unit of measure.
I've attached a picture of Delaware for comparison.
It was 3.6 Delawares.
That's great.
I like that a lot.
Let's do that. So yes, the ocean will rise and it will rise by 2 meters if CO2 peaks at 1,000 parts per million. And 2 meters – makes a hell of a difference. That's where, you know, the smart money has already bought something inland.
Oh, right.
And they're waiting for the beach to show up.
That beachfront property you own in Arkansas.
That's right. Right. This brings us to, when we're talking about the natural world, this brings us to another thing. Even in 2019, we as a species were undergoing what's called a great extinction. Mm-hmm. Great extinctions are nothing new. It's not the first. This will not be the last. But they are brutal to experience in the moment. You know, 1,000 years hence, we will have already have lost quite a few wild animals, mm-hmm. quite a few plants. Ton of insects, many of which were never discovered before they went extinct. But because we're 1,000 years in the future now, we may also be able to pull a woolly mammoth and bring them back. We just don't know where we will put them.
Well, Ben, you spent so much time trying to figure out if you could.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You never stopped to think if you should.
You know, is that Dr. Ian Malcolm?
Me.
Is that Ian Malcolm?
Yes. A bastardization of it, but yes.
Yeah. It's true.
We look at all these things, like they're just talking about the bees are now on the endangered species list. And they say, you know, where are we without bees and pollinization? I mean, herding, Very much so.
Yeah.
So you better hope that we have that kind of technology or the wherewithal now to change things. Like you said, a hard stop, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, there needs to be a lot of hard stops in almost every one of these camps for our next 1,000 years to be something that we want to be a part of.
Another threat to throw into the ring,
yeah,
other than being in an extinction moment, other than where the climate could go from a warming perspective, we are overdue for the next ice age.
Oh, yeah.
Very true.
And a 1,000 years makes it much more likely. Now, it's a weird catch-22 because most scientists think that the reason it hasn't happened again yet is because of the global warming.
So in a way, we're saving ourselves.
Yes. Saving ourselves by killing ourselves, yeah. It's like cutting the rope, but you're like hanging over a vat of acid. Like, I'm either going to hang here or I'm going to fall into the vat of acid. These are not good outcomes. I am not a climatologist. I don't know if I told you that, guys, before we started the show. I'm not.
No, you're not like some kind of weather surgeon or whatever they call it.
a climatician. But I have to imagine that the balance there of global warming versus the Earth really wants its next ice age all play in somehow to a cosmic soup of not goodness.
Yes. Yeah. That's the thing. That's what makes this a tricky topic. If we're talking about the planet in 1,000 years, it's going to be around.
Right.
It's going to be, by and large, still home to some sort of life. The question is whether or not people are still going to be in the mix. And if we're assuming that they are, they're going to be radically different from what we know. That thing we talked about where we could speak, well, we could interact with someone from 1019 and they would look sort of like us. That's probably not the case.
No.
In 3019.
Because of environmental or designer reasons, either or.
I would argue largely designer reasons, because now we are capable in 3019 of impacting, affecting, and steering our own evolution and adaptations, because despite the Great Extinction, despite the ups and downs with the climate or the ecology in which we live, if we're around and civilization hasn't collapsed, we are going to be doing amazing science fiction level stuff. Mm-hmm. Will we be close to being a Type 2 civilization? I don't know. Type 2 has a hell of a gap. You know, is Type 2 the one where you are able to
your star,
harness the entire.
So basically, will we have a Dyson sphere?
Yes,
or progress to where we don't need one because we've come up with some other exotic
way
energy source.
Maybe we get to Type 1 and we say, okay, let's stay here. Let's franchise out Mars, and maybe
it's my shopping district.
Yeah, if the Martians want to do it, they can. But we will have this amazing technology. We will have super fast computers, perhaps. So very quick that they are no longer computers to us. They are part of us, you know. Like we mentioned, with people becoming, becoming digital versions of themselves. This is rife for. Also, a side note, a new era of folklore. Can you imagine all the urban legends? You will literally hear voices in your head. Your ancestors will not have died.
Right.
They will still exist.
Ooh.
Yeah. You've got beef with your great uncle. Yeah. He's still around.
Now, you're saying he's still around because they captured his consciousness?
Yes.
Okay. It's funny, one of the technologies they're talking about, but this could be actually a lot sooner than 1,000 years, is just taking enough writings and enough other input about a person and their life, and all of a sudden you input all of that and you get into augmented or virtual reality and you're sitting there having a conversation with Samuel Clemens.
Mm-hmm.
Tolstoy. It's an approximation, obviously, thereof. Sure. But you mean actually talking to the person,
right? Right. The
digital essence of that person.
The digital essence, the closest we could get, perhaps, to a soul at that point. But it gets even weirder because we will also, like at this point, we're clearly in ship of thesis territory. And this means that, you know, maybe let's say you have the digital ghost of your great-great-grandmother says, you know what, Brent? I remember the Scorpion Wars, and I would love to go to that museum with you. Just buy me a body real quick.
Right.
Because now it's just hardware. Do you know what I mean?
The Scorpion Wars.
They call them a sleeve. What was that in? Altered Carbon.
Yes.
Give me a new sleeve. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, guys, let's stop right there for a second, and we'll come right back after a word from our sponsor. All right, strap in. Let's get back in this.
The other wild card here.
Yeah.
That could impact every aspect of what we've talked about, whether it be how we harness power. Do we have the technology to create a Dyson sphere? Do we have the technology to save our Earth? To do all of these things would be the interference of another society, extraterrestrials.
Interdimensional.
Or interdimensional, sure. We talk about this on our show a lot, whether we believe in aliens. There's two questions always hidden there. Do you believe that another form of life exists in this universe?
Absolutely.
Second question, do you think they've been here?
That's exactly
where we are. I don't think that they've been here, but I think we are very, very close to them showing up. Like I think we're getting far enough along to be able to send some signals out there, to be able to see things. I think that we're going to get to a point very soon where they're just going to show up one day.
Have our warp drive moment.
From Star Trek First Contact. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have our warp drive moment. Now, if that happens, mm-hmm. which I think is just as realistic a possibility as we can upload our conscious. I mean it's just they're showing up. Hey, they're here. They're there. Because if we do acknowledge they exist – if depending on how old they are, their technology, if they are able to reach us from something that we can't see right now, chances are their technology is so advanced that they could help bring us along. And I mentioned wild card. That would be the ultimate wild card because they're introducing new technologies to us that bring us. I don't think it's the alienation thing where they're just as messed up as we are, and have the same internal wars and strife, and because then that doesn't align to me. How could they have gotten here so quickly with such advanced technology just to be as effed up as we are?
That opens up that whole other, line of thinking of if they are that advanced and they're going to see that, why do they care?
Right, right. That's the thing. The question then becomes not whether we would be capable of recognizing this as sentient life. It would be whether it recognizes us as such.
Michio Kaku, he goes, everyone sees anthills. Yeah. When's the last time you said, ants, here are beads and trinkets. Take me to your queen. Like, you don't say that. And if you do, the ants don't know you're talking to them. Now, is the ant dumb because it doesn't understand English? Or are you dumb because you're trying to talk to an ant?
I'm dumb because I've got the magnifying glass out and I'm trying to burn them with the sun.
Yeah, right. How could you? I mean, everything gets very quickly to the level of stories from the Old Testament. You know what I mean?
Right.
We can give favor to these ants and they'll say, oh, food. Or like, oh, the other ants that were killing us are mysteriously gone and the land is poisoned.
I just hope wherever we go, if we're ever in that position to where we can be the ones to go out there, we just build pyramids and leave.
Yeah.
And so generations.
I mean, that's a power move. You know what I mean? I vote we get weird with it.
Yeah. Let's just confuse the hell out of them.
Let's give some very basic and wildly arbitrary, irrelevant rules. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Let's ban people from doing – or let's ban a life form from doing something very specific with its antenna or its – and it's got to be something they would normally have never thought of doing.
Right.
But you're right. This span of time, this 1,000 years, it inherently includes space exploration. At this point, right, very, very soon, as far as 2019 went, Elon Musk was planning to have 4 ships permanently on a circuit to Mars in the 2022
they're going to start sending. Mm-hmm. You know, 2025 I think is when that's going to kick into – yeah.
Yeah. So even if that estimate is wildly optimistic, which it is, but even if it's so wildly optimistic that that doesn't happen until 2125, still another 900 years.
Right.
So if we're going to get to space, it is going to be within this time span, which makes it one of the most important eras in human history. And that goes to your point, John. That will involve us putting out so much noise in the universe, even more than we already have. And we all read those, you know, those kind of bleak dystopian sci-fi pieces where we finally get a message from space and it's something cryptic like, shh, they'll hear you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that could be a thing, because we could also find ourselves in a situation – we're just speculating now. There's not a basis on this. There's a thought experiment. We could find ourselves in a situation where – I would advance this is more likely than meeting a biological life form, where we find the creations of some other organic life form and they're really into paperclips. We know that Pluto – used to be an entire sphere, but it's slowly disintegrating. And then we have that calculate. That's the thing. Given what we understand about travel across these impossibly vast distances, unless they have a propulsion or transit system that redefines our understanding of physics, which they pretty much would have to, we would be in one of the worst waiting games ever. We would say we know something's coming. We know it's not natural. We have 400 years to get
right,
ready.
Yeah. So people are going to build religions around that. Yep. I mean, everything. Mass hysteria.
Yeah. And a lot of religions that we had back in 2019. I'm riding this dead horse to the ground. They will have also changed such that they may be widely unrecognizable to people who practice them today, right? The Catholic Church has soldiered throughout the years and may well still exist, but may also have a very different set of practices.
Well, they've come out in years recent and said, like, hey, if aliens come, it's okay. It's part of God's plan. It's part of the Bible, you know? All inclusive. Bring it on in, you know?
Which you would have been burned for not that long ago.
Right.
For saying the same thing. Ben, I think you bring up a really good point. But you can almost take it to the next level, not just religion, but society and species changes. So continuing along the thought experiment, as a society, we're probably a global society by that point.
Yeah.
We probably speak 1 to 2 languages as a group. The rest are dead languages. And we probably, you know, 1 currency for the planet. I mean, these are just things that are almost inevitable over that time period. If that's the case and we are an interplanetary species, we're going to have to do some of the things that we discussed earlier, some gene editing, some addition of cybernetics, things of that nature. We're going to have to change to live in different environments. So there's probably going to be a group of people – they could be living on the Oort cloud.
Yeah.
There will be a group of people at living near Proxima Centauri. All of these people will have had to have changed and could be gone for long enough periods of time because of how long it takes to get there, that their heritage, the way they look, they almost would be disassociate themselves from the history of man. They are their own thing.
We have created aliens. 1,000 years hence, we have created aliens. The most well-known to us are probably Martians.
Correct.
But the lunar people are pretty weird too.
You know what I mean?
They're like the new Florida. And
it's underwater. They had to go somewhere.
So, Moon man instead of Florida man, yeah.
By which I meant awesome and Disney owns it.
That's right.
But that's fantastic though, because now we may have also – this is the weird part. This maybe 1,000 years is too small a margin for this. But what if we had a successful colony on Mars, somehow survived, not just survived, but thrived, and then civilization on Earth collapsed. We entered a dark age. We had legends about Martians, but they never screwed up to the extent that we did. And they decide to come visit us. Right. And they're like, wow, our parents' house is trash.
Right.
Like that would be an alien encounter for us. They would be extraterrestrials.
Right.
But at this point, we will have had, if we're around at all, we will have had people visiting these places and hopefully living there on a semi-permanent basis. Very quickly, and I think you raised this point earlier, Brent, they will speciate.
Be completely uploaded into some sort of cybernetic, you know.
Westworld.
Right, and then that negates all of that, you know.
So we may have a situation where everybody on Earth speaks those 1 to 2 languages. That's incredibly likely. But we may be in a situation where someone says, okay, I have to use my cybernetic parts to my in the cloud software programming because I've got to speak with this Martian and who knows what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah.
And it becomes even more likely if we play out the scenario we discussed earlier where we're using we start with self-replicating robots getting us to other places. And then if we want to go there because we can't survive, you know, the 500-year trip or whatever, we laser shoot our consciousness there. Like Michio Kaku, you mentioned him earlier, Brent. He talks about a day where we will be cosmic tourists. And so, oh, you want to go, you know, look at this exoplanet that is, you know, 50 light years away. We shoot through a laser our consciousness. There you've got a robot body waiting there that you rent for the day and you go look around and see the big volcanoes and then you shoot to the next planet and so on and so forth. Now, taking that a step back, just the ability to get there but and shoot a large laser beam, shoot our consciousness there. If we shoot there and the laser itself could take 500 years to get there depending on how far away it is, if there's no time involved to you, you get there and then, you know, 1,000 of your friends, you start a new – all of a sudden now we've got a new species of robot people.
Right. Well, and yeah, and we're much more likely based on what we understand about sentient life, which is very, very little, we're much more likely to run into technology of some sort that sentient life created. It's the Vajir kind of example from Star Trek, right? And what's fascinating about that is there's a very important step that we can't miss. And I know as some of us were listening along, we said, well, all right, send your consciousness through this laser, robot people, come back to Earth, right? Return these memories to, you know, Matt or John Prime or whatever you call yourselves. To experience that, what that means is they're going to have to reverse the cloud process. They're going to take the relationship between neurons mapped out virtually and they'll see the difference between that and then have your neurons perform the same dance somehow.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
That now you can remember these things. And all you had to do was, you know, to wait, switch bodies, whatever, repair yourself for 500 to 1,000 years.
Jeez.
So it's like, you know, it's – there's some time involved.
I just want to know one thing. How long will I need to work to build up that kind of time off?
No.
Oh, that's the question. Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to put my out of office on. I'll be back in 1,000 years.
DMV, still terrible.
Still terrible.
It is crazy to imagine that perhaps one day our species will think of time on that kind of scale.
I think we would have to inevitably, or it'll just be an illusory thing. We know that we'll have terraforming down pat. It'll still be – it'll be an imperfect science, but we'll have a lot better idea of what we're working in with and what the scale is. We will have finally answered your earlier question, gentlemen, whether it's better to use a laser or a nuclear weapon on the poles of Mars.
Right. Yes.
We'll have new energy sources, some of which we're going to have difficulty comprehending in 2019, like harnessing interactions in higher dimensions or different dimensions. We'll also have utility fog, which is
– Utility fog?
Yeah. It's like a – well, it's a thought experiment now, but it's like – so the Philosopher's Stone in alchemy can transform any substance into any other substance. A utility fog, rather, is kind of like a nanotech version of that. You can say, well, I enjoy this domicile, but now I want something a bit more, what do they call it? Southwestern. I want something with a Pueblo feel. Make it so. And then this fog, these nanobots would just rearrange into whatever they thought you meant. Now, hopefully it won't be as fraught with hilarious error as telling your Amazon or your Google Home in 2019 what song you want to hear.
Right.
Tea, Earl Grey, hot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like a crazy 3D printer from the future.
You know? Yeah.
Just a living, breathing 3D printer.
I just made the quite necessary Star Trek The Next Generation reference.
Yeah.
The better series, sorry. I know. I just made a hot take.
Hot takes with John Goforth. You just started a war in 2019.
Yes. Kirk or Picard, you decide.
Picard.
Thank you. The one thing we haven't talked about with all of this is, okay, but what if we do achieve faster than light travel, or what if we do find a way to bend space-time to where you can, you know, warp 7? And
then we just virus out everywhere.
Yeah.
That is just
– in a word, it's going to be baller.
Yeah. Right.
Because like we can – we will be able to finally confirm things that we have wondered about since we were able to wonder about things. Are we rare? Are we alone in the universe? And by the time by the time we take time out of the equation, which is tricky, but that is the right way to say it in English, then all bets are off. Everything has changed. You know, if you are warping time and space, then you can visit 1019 if you so wish to, right? I don't know if people would or if we recognize, because now at this point in 3019, people are recognizable to us, but we are early man to them.
Right.
And we use our hands to do things, not out of some sort of fashion statement, but because we have to.
Right. We still eat a whole bunch of food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, here's the thing. So we've talked about this in the past. Human beings now, we think of ourselves as individuals, but we're much closer to cities ourselves, given all the cells that outnumber us, that live inside us. This trend will continue. And in 1,000 years, again, if people are still around and nothing super horrific and existential occurs, we are going to redefine our privacy will be gone, long gone.
Oh, yeah.
Privacy is a relatively recent notion in 2019, and that's probably when it started dying out too. But by 3019, privacy will be a weird alien, why would you do that concept? And the concept of the individual will change as well, because the individual will be just the way that our consciousness now is an agglomeration, or the sum total of interactions between neurons. We will each individually be a networked node of several different things. You won't just have one cloud consciousness. Mm-hmm. You'll have multiple. You'll be a group mind. And at times, that group mind might not agree with what you consider you, which is freaky. I mean,
yeah,
it's something we've always stated in multiple languages throughout ancient history. When people are like, oh, I'm on the fence. I'm of two minds about that. You will be of several hundred.
Right.
Well, guys, in the end, no matter, you know, all the things we've discussed so far in this episode, All of us in this room, the four of us, Paul out there, everyone listening in their office right now while they should be working.
Bot.
And oh, conspiracy bot, I didn't even see you back there. He must be recharging.
Drunk.
Oh, that's what it is.
They eventually pass out.
So all of us, you know, in the end, we're all going to get together in 2019 and decide that our species is going to move forward towards the future. We're going to steer our planet and our civilization in the direction of a utopian 3019.
Yeah. Can we get some inspiring yeah. music under that?
I'm totally, totally kidding, you guys. All of the decisions that could lead to any type of utopian future will be made in corporate boardrooms and in government situation rooms, and the decisions will be based on profits and margins and election cycles. The end. We fizzle out.
For some point of time, I wish we had more time. I find myself – this is unusual for us, Matt. I find myself a little bit more optimistic, I think.
It's because of these guys.
It probably is. And speaking of John and Brent, maybe we should end on a cooperative note and go around the table. First off, guys, thank you so much for coming on our show on behalf of us and our listeners. Secondly, two questions. We'll start with you, John. One, what of the things we've examined today, what do you find most exciting? And two, what do you find most terrifying?
Ooh.
If you had to choose.
Let me do it in reverse order. I think the most terrifying is the idea of moving from where we are to that next phase, to where we become a first or second class civilization according to the Kardashev scale. I think the road between here and there is littered with a lot of potholes that could be really, really take us off track and could become one of those existential threats, whichever one you want to talk about. I mean, I think they're all just as likely as – one's just as likely as another, you know. That's the most terrifying part because and the reason that's the most terrifying is I'm a pretty big optimist when it comes to these things. I think a lot of negative human behavior is driven by need and necessity. Certainly some people are driven by power, but that power is rooted in the power that other people will give to them. Mm-hmm. And if the masses are fairly happy, they're not going to allow a tyrant to run them in just my one guy's thought. So I think that if we are able to get to 1,000 years from now and we have made it past these existential threats, I do see a little bit more utopian. I think we'll be interacting with other alien species and I think we will be a multi-planetary, perhaps multi-galaxial, if that's not a word, I just made it up.
Sounds pretty cool.
Species. And I think it could be a really, really cool future. We just got to get there.
I think the for me, the thing that is the most exciting is the thought of the exploration, what's out there, what we could do. You know, it's one of those things you can just shut your brain off and think, and there's really no wrong answers because we don't know, and that's what's awesome. The scariest part of that ties into that too is I'm still hung up on the whole uploading of our consciousness and what we will be. If in 1,000 years for us to be able to do those things, will we still be human? You know, and, you know, that's what's it mean to be human, you know, I think is the big question. And for us to be able to explore the cosmos, to go out to survive, we're going to have to make a lot of changes, you know, internally, externally, physically. And what that does to us is a big question mark to me.
Wow. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having us. It was a blast.
Just why don't you tell everybody a little bit more about Hysteria 51, where they can find you, what they should be listening to and everything.
So if you haven't listened to Hysteria 51, we talk about a lot of stuff like this, like conspiracy theories, UFOs, the unexplained, the unexplored. We do it a little bit differently in that our third host is not Noel. That'd be weird if it was. Our third host is an angry robot who you see here in the corner named Conspiracy Bot. And Brent built him in his lab to help edit and produce the show. Instead, he just pardon me. Instead, he just gets drunk and threatens to take over the world, though he's kind of run by like a 486 computer, so it's not a big threat.
Oh, okay.
He's not an existential threat. But yeah, and you can find us wherever you listen to your podcast. Our website's hysteria51.com.
Yeah, just anywhere, Facebook, Twitter, you know, Instagram, Smoke Signal. We'll get to you.
And you have Hysteria Nation?
Hysteria Nation. Yeah, you can search for that on Facebook. That's our discussion group, and it's pretty active, so we have a lot of fun in there.
Awesome.
And you can tell us, you know, that we're wrong.
You can also occasionally catch one of us, Matt or myself, popping in on Hysteria Nation. Because we are also fans of the show.
That's right. And check out, just while we're here, everyone listening, check out our Facebook group, Here's Where It Gets Crazy. Just, again, anything you want to talk about on this show, you've got questions for these guys, let's just all have a discussion. Let's talk about the future. Let's talk about how none of it's going to be good, in my opinion.
Isn't it such a downer? It's like, what's the future? Oh, God.
As Matt shakes his fist at the sky in the inevitable slow grind of what we recognize today as time, we reach the end of our episode, but not the end of our show. Tune into our next episode, which, without laying any spoilers, because we're not quite sure which one we're going to do yet, is going to be very, 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 very strange.
And positive. So positive.
Oh, so good. Angel farts, trumpets.
Yeah.
Nice, like, slow jazz numbers, whatever. But in the meantime, we'd like to hear from you. You are indeed our favorite part of the show. No offense, John. No offense, Brent. You might be one of those people who says, guys, you did an episode on Facebook. I believe you. I don't want to use social media. Can't I just call you?
Yes, you can. We are 1-833-STDWYTK. That's STDWYTK. Yeah, it also has numbers associated with it. It's an anagram for stuff I want you to know.
But Matt, what if people say, I hate social media and using the phone? I wish I could just write an email. Good thing is, they're in luck.
Exactly. Take a pigeon. On that pigeon, make sure you've got a piece of paper that has sufficient message on there. Wrap it around that pigeon's leg. Now, you're going to want to adhese that so it doesn't come off, right? You send the pigeon off. Hopefully, it knows where it's going, preferably south, and it'll get to us. Oh, and also you can email us. We are conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.